Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to the FT Money Show, brought to you by Investors Chronicle and FT Money.
Hello and welcome to the FT Money Show. In today's programme, a long-awaited interest rate cut, but will it alleviate the borrowing problems now faced by more homeowners and credit card holders? Any port in a storm? Can a new shipping fund offer an alternative to volatile equity investments? Clean energy funds? Can these keep motoring ahead under their hybrid power, presumably, even in a bear market? And we have some good news and bad news on currencies. I'm Matthew Vincent, and I'll be giving you the lowdown on all of these money matters in downloadable form, with the help of my colleagues from FT Money, Steve Lodge.
Hello.
And Charlene Goff.
Hello.
So let's start with the money news then. This week we've finally had the much-expected quarter point cut in interest rates. But given that's in the US, rates have come down by 1.25% in just a matter of weeks. I mean, is this Bank of England move too little to help indebted consumers in the UK? Steve, what do you think it'll mean for people with mortgages?
Well, Matthew, obviously for people on fixes, no change whatsoever. People on existing borrowers, on trackers, their mortgages will come down point for point. So they will come down a quarter point. Probably, though, they might have to wait a couple of weeks till the end of the month. The interesting question is what lenders will do for people on variable rate mortgages. These are mortgages maybe on a discount, maybe not, maybe priced off the underlying standard variable rate. Will they pass on the full quarter point? Who knows? And for new mortgages out there, of course, as well, recently, if you've been looking for mortgages, you'll find that they'd be more expensive. The discounts are less attractive and so on. Whether the quarter point cut will be passed on into that pricing is also an open question.
Let's turn to savers now. We've seen in recent weeks some of the rates available on accounts, particularly one-year bonds, not really having an awful lot to do with the prevailing Bank of England base rate and being all about what a particular bank needs to raise in terms of capital. Is that situation going to continue?
I think so, yes. I mean, you are going to get... I mean, generally speaking, a rate cut has got to be bad news for savers. Most people are on variable rate savings accounts. And I think banks and building societies are likely to continue to differentiate between what they call the back book, either people who've got old accounts they've forgotten about, the ones not in the front shop window, and they will get the full quarter point cut out, or possibly even more. They will continue, though, at the same time, to have these shop window attractive offers, whether they're fixed rates or indeed variable rates, that will continue to seem to almost ignore what's happening, the underlying base rate movements.
Charlene, you've been looking at some of the sort of credit difficulties that we've heard about this week as well, with holders of the Egg credit card discovering that their customer isn't wanted, an increase in repossessions as well. Will something as relatively small as a quarter point cut in interest rates alleviate any credit difficulties that people are in, or are loans, mortgages, credit cards now being priced according to customer risk rather than cost?
Well, that's exactly it. They are increasingly being priced according to risk. So if a customer has got a very clean credit record and isn't likely to run into any affordability problems in the near future, they should be okay. But increasingly, those people who have missed a payment, even something very minor, such as a mobile phone bill maybe, or a council tax payment, something like that, they could struggle to get further credit in future, whether that's a credit card or if they want to remortgage, extend their mortgage, something like that. That could still be trickier for them, even though base rates have come down.
So if you were on a variable rate mortgage, as Steve has just described it, and you wanted to move to something that was cheaper, perhaps a tracker or a fixed rate, remortgaging may not be as easy as it once was.
That's definitely true. And people even, people with good salaries could come in for a bit of a shock when they look to remortgage, because they might find their lender takes a more thorough look at their past record, looking for any sign that they could default in future. And people, could be taken by surprise there. Also, the other thing is for people with big credit card debt, other loans, lenders don't tend to price those according to the base rate. So rates there could stay very high. There's a significant tightening up among credit card lenders. So people who've got that extra debt might not see the benefits.
Steve, you've got a particularly good mortgage rate at the moment. I suppose the big question is your credit history good enough to remortgage when it runs out?
Oh, well, I suspect my credit history is appalling, Matthew. But I think lenders are increasingly accepting things like low loan to value. People who've had mortgages for a long period of time, like old men like myself, have relatively low loan to values. Now, So I'm turning around to my mortgage lender and saying, really, what is the risk here? You have so much equity you could draw on before a potential negative equity type situation occurred. So why not give me the best deal? But I think I'm 4.79 or something. But I think you're even better.
I have a slightly lower rate, but like you, I'm going to face the remortgaging issue later this year, which will be interesting for us both, and I imagine for lots of our listeners. And for more on the interest rate cut on repossessions and credit cards, you can read Steve and Charlene's articles in FT Money with the Weekend FT on the 9th and 10th of February, and online at ft.com/money. You can also send in your questions about borrowing and saving for us to answer by emailing us at ask.ftyourmoney@ft.com. Still to come in the programme, can you be a green investor and clean up, even if stock markets take further falls? And we have some good news and bad news on currencies and exchange rates. But first, alternative investments. As fund managers search for asset classes that are uncorrelated with equity markets, one in particular has gone further than most. Marine Capital has announced the launch of Eclipse Shipping Limited, the first UK-based vehicle to offer private investors the chance to buy into container ships. In theory, shipping should be more immune from a UK and US economic downturn, as it benefits from the strong global trade with India and China and the valuable trade in oil. So to find out more, Ellen Kelleher from FT Money went to meet the chief executive of Marine Capital, Anthony Foster.
So, Tony, shipping offers an interesting opportunity for investors looking for assets that are uncorrelated with the equity markets. Can you tell us a little bit more about this company that you're running and how investors can take part in it?
The company is itself an English company which operates as a fund, but quite simply the investors buy shares in an English company, and that English company owns ships. We deal only in merchant ships, and within merchant ships, we deal only in what we call generic ships. When we say generic, what we mean is commoditized. We mean ships of which there are hundreds of any given type, so that when we deal with such a ship, it's a very transparent market. And the investors themselves, which I think is quite comforting for them, can check those values and those earnings pretty much on a daily basis if they wanted to.
And how many ships are in the portfolio?
The number of ships in the portfolio will obviously depend upon the amount of equity ultimately raised. We deal in modern ships, and they can cost anything from $50 million to more than $100 million apiece, because we always deal in dollars, by the way. We would normally have something like 70% gearing, so $30 million of equity buys us one ship, maybe two.
But aren't ships like cars? I mean, don't they depreciate in value? So how can an investor expect to beat the equity markets if a ship will depreciate over time?
Our ships do indeed depreciate. 25 is, from accounting perspective, is the life of a ship. But within those 25 years, your earnings are so high and your residual value at such a level that your IRR exceeds the IRR that you would have made in the equity markets.
And can you explain the tax benefits of investing in ships?
We don't, as it were, propose shipping because it's tax effective. However, within the UK and in other European jurisdictions, we have something called the tonnage tax. And the tonnage tax was introduced, interestingly, by John Prescott some years ago to encourage the maintenance of a maritime industry in the UK. What it does is it effectively allows an onshore company to compete with an offshore company by allowing the company which owns ships to pay corporation tax based on the tonnage of the ship. What that means is that effectively the corporation tax of the company is minimal. The company operates within a tax-free ring fence. So for the British taxpayer, for example, who is a shareholder, he has the equivalent of an ISA.
And Tony, you claim that shipping over the last 20 years has outperformed some of the equity indices. Could you explain why and how?
Shipbuilding 25 years ago and more was a subsidized business, particularly in Europe. We therefore had an oversupply of ships in the market at the same time as we had relatively modest growth in demand for those ships. What we've had in recent years and what we see developing into the future is non-subsidized shipbuilding. Shipbuilding is barely keeping up with the demand. The growth of the urbanizing and industrializing economies like China are so important to the shipping business that we are enjoying above-trend growth, which we expect to see well into the future.
That was Ellen Kelleher talking to Anthony Foster of Marine Capital. And for more on quirky, uncorrelated investments, see Ellen's article in FT Money on the 9th and 10th of February. Coming up, we have good news and bad news on the sterling-euro exchange rate. Before that, though, ethical or green investment. Shares in clean energy companies still have high valuations in relation to their actual profits. So stock market volatility has led some analysts to wonder if a fall in the oil price might burst their hydrogen bubble. But as regulation boosts demands for their clean energy products, can the so-called green chip investments outperform the blue chips or the environmentally unfriendly brown chips of the FTSE 100? John McLeod of Investors Chronicle put these and other questions to Alex Davies from advisor Hargreaves Lansdown.
So Alex, this theme of climate change has been quite an important one for the investment community, and there have been a number of fund launches in the last 6 months or so.
By the end of this month, we will have seen six launches in this area, some of them from some key investment groups, F&C, Schroeder, HSBC, Virgin, Allianz and Impax will all have launched climate change funds by the end of February. There's several drivers behind this, one of which is the high oil price is a need for us to find alternative energy. That is certainly one aspect of these funds. Equally is the drive from the EU and from the world generally to find alternative energies. We're looking to cut emissions by 20% by 2020 just in the EU. All of these are drivers for companies to make changes to produce products that are able to combat the effects of climate change.
In terms of share price of clean energy companies, would you say there's a lot of the growth is already priced in there?
In some cases, certainly. I think if you look at the Allianz Fund, I think their portfolio currently trades on a forward PE of about 24 times. I mean, there's definitely considered that to sort of be slightly expensive, perhaps, but that is a technology fund ultimately and a growth area and a growth fund. You do tend to have naturally have higher PEs, but some of it's already priced in. That doesn't necessarily mean there isn't further to go. I think that this is a long-term trend. I don't think that it's, and like any sort of trend, it's bound to experience ups and downs, volatility over the shorter term. Over the long term, however, say over 20 years or more, this is, I think, is a trend that is going to develop.
So do you think that in a bear market scenario, these share prices might be hit?
The answer is I think yes, all these ones could be affected by short-term volatility. I don't see any reason why they wouldn't be. Equally, because of what they're investing, if everything does continue as things are at the moment, there's such a push behind climate change, they could buck that trend.
That was John McLeod talking to Alex Davies from Hargreaves Lansdown. And for John's article on clean energy and other green investments, look out for the Investors Chronicle on sale from the 8th of February. And finally today, it's good news, bad news on currencies and exchange rates. Steve, what's the good news in all of this?
Good news, Matthew, is, as people will have been aware recently, the dollar has been weak, and it's still possible to get close to an exchange rate of $2 to the pound. So stateside trips, still excellent value. US, of course, as everyone knows, is generally speaking a very cheap country for many things, fuel, you know, clothes, electronics. You know, there are exceptions. New York hotels are outrageously expensive and so on.
But if you go over to New York, certainly the shopping experience has been a very good value for money. What's the bad news? Is this situation going to change?
So the bad news, Matthew, well, first of all, the euro, the pound is at a record low against the euro. The euro introduced in 2002. So the entire eurozone, in exchange rate terms, is more expensive than it's been since 2002. Added in, there are a couple of other currencies out there, the Australian dollar, the Canadian dollar, people thinking long haul, those are at multi-year lows against the pound is at a multi-year low against those currencies as well. And the dollar, the US dollar, which is, of course, the $2 pound that everyone's really enjoyed over the last year, shopping trips in New York and so on. Currency experts now say as the UK follows the US into economic slowdown, that exchange rate balance is going to change, and we could see an exchange rate more like $1.80 this year, which would be back to more traditional norms, and therefore holiday costs would be more expensive for Brits.
Now, you know, all of us on FT Money like to think that we're fairly savvy, and yet a number of us seem to be heading off to Europe on various trips. And Charlene, you're off to France next week. Is that going to be quite as cost-effective as it once was?
Well, luckily the flights are still dirt cheap, so that's some comfort. But yeah, it's going to cost a bit more. So I think really now we're looking at paying 75p for a euro.
And that in real money, of course, is about an exchange rate of 1.35. £1 equals 1.35 euro.
Definitely lower than when we've been over there in the past. So I guess we'll be paying a bit more for our pain au chocolat.
Indeed, but I'm sure it'll still be worth it. Well, if you'd like to know more about the impact of these exchange rate movements on the costs of holidays and costs of travel, have a look out for Steve's article in FT Money with the Weekend FT on the 9th and 10th of February. That's all we have time for in this week's FT Money Show. Remember, you can email your views and your questions to ask.ftyourmoney@ft.com. And we'll be back next week with another financial lowdown in downloadable form. Until then, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from Steve and Charlene.
Goodbye. Bye.